beautiful phrases about the mind is presence of mind. Presence of mind. And within a spiritual context, this phrase, presence of mind, which implies, quite correctly, I think, a certain stability of mind and a certain choice of response. So, arising perhaps out of, you know, hard-won self-awareness. But presence of mind quickly translates into what kind of presence are we bringing into the most challenging of our situations, particularly when they hurt us, when they wound us, when they insult our, not just our sense of ourselves, but in a way our sensibility, our deepest sense of who we are, and also what we most want from others. Yeah. So we have this possibility with presence of mind to allow presence of mind itself to be a teacher. And yes, we will have our immediate reactiveness, our immediate reawakening of old wounds, our immediate reawakening of old chaos and panic. I can't bear this. I can't bear it. I don't deserve it, and I can't bear it. All of that comes within no time that we could even count. It's so fast. Yeah? Then we also, with the inspiration of the intaking breath, thank you so much, we have the possibility to pause. And the pause is one of our most sacred practices. It is in the pause that choice occurs. It is in the pause that compassion can possibly arise. The pause is the space between event and reaction. I wrote so much about this in the chapter on restraint in Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love. I actually would go so far as to say to you today, there is no consciousness without practicing restraint. Because our first reaction is almost always defensive, and defensiveness very quickly translates into offense. We feel entitled to attack. Or we feel entitled to meet the other at the same tonal level. Do you know what I mean by that? You know, like meeting like? Well, that doesn't help us. It doesn't help the other person either. But it especially doesn't help us. Sometimes we need to use our empathic imagination to run this through many times in anticipation of those kinds of situations. It's, you know, where we talk about our buttons being pressed. We all have our particular buttons. We all have our sensitivities. I want you to consider, it's not a request, but I want you to consider bringing greater curiosity and creativity to your buttons. It will give you more spaciousness in which to pause. And of course, not just creativity, compassion. I wanted to show you this folder, which, as you know, is from a detail in a very famous Da Vinci painting. And I believe that, you might correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it is the mother of Mary, Anne, looking at her daughter with such poignancy, because we could imagine that in the artist's eyes he saw across time And he knew that this mother would know that her daughter had not only been chosen to be the mother of the Christ, but also that her mother, that her daughter would experience the outer reaches of suffering, which is to see one's own child suffer. Yeah, isn't it? And of course, all human beings are at some level our own children. But our own children are, in very particular ways, our own children. But if you are not the physical bearer of children, all of humankind is your child. And maybe very particularly, because you haven't been called upon to have favorites. You have your favorites. Okay. So what I'm really asking you within the context of this teaching on acceptance within the greater context of peacefulness and doing no harm to oneself is to really be very clear with yourself that you are bringing acceptance of the truth of your feelings and not disdaining them, not judging them, not judging them as unworthy of you or your picture of yourself, but bringing compassion to them. And if those feelings are very hard to bear, also asking what those feelings need. Asking what those feelings need. What then you're calling on inspiration. What do those feelings need? All of this is to take the sting out of your reactiveness. Reactiveness is very close to hand, isn't it? So from defensiveness, we can very quickly move to offensiveness. And then the tone serves nobody. There are times when we need simply to step back. Look, about 150 years ago when I was young. I used to say about 100 years ago when I was young, but about 150 years ago when I was really young. I had a friend who was a writer, and she told me once this incredibly simple thing that her therapist had said to her, which is in response to particularly ugly things that had been said. "I'm really sorry you feel like that. I see it differently." So you're not saying that the person is wrong. You're not saying that the person is right. But you are also distancing yourself in a really key way. Now, you would have your own phrase. But I haven't forgotten that. And it really was 150 years ago when I first heard it. And I've heard a lot of things since. But that one stuck. "I'm really sorry you see it like that." Because we creep into defending our position. It's very tempting to defend. And when we, as long as we're defending, we're creating distance. And sometimes we need to create distance, but how do we do it? And I think we certainly are entitled to create distance when somebody is being very hurtful and to say, "I don't want to hear this. It does not serve me well. I don't want to hear this. It does not serve me well." There's no spiritual merit, and I've said this often at every retreat, I think. There's no spiritual merit in standing around to hear other people projecting their self-hatred onto you. So here's a beautiful quote from Viktor Frankl. another of my great teachers. Changing oneself often means rising above oneself. Changing oneself often means rising above oneself. What he means, and I feel confident to say what Frankl means in this, is rising above the image you had of yourself this morning. It's now afternoon. But not to kind of torment yourself with what you might have done this morning or yesterday or, you know, 150 years ago, if only you knew what you knew now. On the contrary, just to welcome it. It's a new friend. It's a new nugget. It's a new jewel. Okay, so Frankl actually said, changing oneself often means rising above oneself, growing beyond oneself. But it means growing beyond your limited image of yourself, which is your true nature. Nature is in a constant process of evolution. And so is your spiritual nature. You are constantly evolving. And every experience that you have supports it or impedes it. Supports, impedes. Supports, impedes. I want to speak to you in a few moments about Wu Wei, which is sort of like a treat. A treat for the later morning. But I want to speak to you, first of all, about lessening anxiety as a spiritual practice. I hope that what I've just taught potentially lessens anxiety. I hope that what I have just taught opens you to the possibility that your mind is more spacious than you can imagine. The nature of mind is not closed. The very nature of mind is spacious. And this is what meditation teaches you. No matter how paltry your efforts, and all our efforts are paltry, there will be just some moments in which you recognize that a very boring or very debilitating or crushing thought can actually lie down. Take a lunch break from here to eternity. Can lie down. And in its place can arise spaciousness. Hilary mentioned to me yesterday about Eckhart Tolle writing a line in a book that she liked this line. Don't believe everything you think. I mean, from my psychosynthesis training, we used to say, you are not your thoughts. But I think don't believe everything you think is much more playful. You are not your thoughts. Sometimes your thoughts colonize you. Sometimes your thoughts inspire you. Your thoughts come in every garb. But you are not your thoughts. And you don't have to believe all of them. You can bring your poet's mind to them and say, where is the beauty in this? Where is the wonder in this? Where is the strength in this? Where is the harmony in this? Where is the ugliness so that I can transform it? And if it takes me lifetimes, so what? I am evolving. So, lessening anxiety as a spiritual practice. I want to read you a very familiar teaching, familiar to some of you, so familiar it's written across your heart, and less familiar to others of you. No one can serve two masters. You cannot serve the world of the divine and at the same time the world of outer imploring. Therefore, I say to you, do not let your soul be anxious your mind will be anxious. Your mind is trained in anxiety, isn't it? Some of us are anxious from the moment we wake till the moment we sleep. And there is always something to be anxious about. And I say this to you with great love, because it's very much the challenge of our times. How do we... We are not only the worried well. I think that's a terribly disparaging expression. But we don't know how to worry well. We don't know how to worry fruitfully. We don't know how to ask this incredibly simple question, what's needed here? Which does not always allay our anxieties, because our anxieties emerge from fear. And that will be with us probably till the end of our days. But we can bring peace. We can bring more peace into our relationship with anxiety itself. We can sit, to use this great Quaker term, we can sit in right relationship to our own anxieties. And I want you to think about that this afternoon. You've got so many prompts on the back of your timetable sheets, never mind the sheets that I'm going to give you at the end of this morning. What is your relationship to anxiety? And how could you bring more peace to it? This is vital to your spiritual practice, because your anxieties often take you away from your soul, from your soul strength, from remembering who you are, and remembering even that everything has a season, and that what you're anxious about today may not be what you're anxious about tomorrow. I've given you some very, very beautiful teachings on acceptance that arose really out of my thinking that I was going to teach on the Serenity Prayer, but in fact finding other teachings that I think might serve you well. All right, back to this one. Do not let your soul be anxious about what you will eat and drink. That means really what you're taking into this physical life. All those experiences that you chew on. All those experiences that you embody, that become part of who you are. It doesn't just mean food and water. It means what you take into the mind and chew on and become. Nor about the clothing you will put on, which really means not just these clothes, but what you drape yourself in terms of reassurances, your ideology, your beliefs, your certainties, your little comforts. You know, all our little ones need comforty blankets, don't they? You know, I see this now with my grandchildren as well as my seeing it with my children and others' children, and remembering it from my Winnicott training, you know, the transitional object that sort of holds mother, holds the inner mother. Yeah, don't let your soul be so anxious. It's not the soul, says this teacher who was called Jesus, is not the soul more than food? And is not the body more than clothing? You're more. You are far more than what you believe and know. Look up at the birds in the sky. They don't worry. Look at the lilies in the field. They don't worry. It is the gift of consciousness. We came into this world as sentient beings. That's what the Buddhists call us. It is the most profound gift that life can offer. that we are sentient beings, that we have choice, and we have the power of freedom, and that we can choose not to harm, and that we can choose to heal. If we had no other teaching, maybe we'll have no other teaching for the rest of the time. We could dwell not on this, we could dwell in this, that we have this gift of sentient feeling life, but we also have this gift of awareness, of consciousness, of allowing the soul to speak through the mind to who we are and to who you are. I mean, it's awesome. It is awesome. But with it comes conscience as well as consciousness. And sometimes this is very uncomfortable. But some of those anxieties that we have and discomforts that we have are such blessings, because they are also teachers waking us up to care more. It is not just that we want to get rid of anxiety. No. We want to be a bit more discerning about what anxiety is teaching us. Not about our inadequacy, yeah, which is often where it rests. Mm. That station called inadequacy, where the train hasn't moved on for quite a while. Mm. Yeah. Let it take us forward to where we care more about our effect on others, and maybe a little bit less about their effect on us. That's hard. Goodness me, it is worth at least considering to care more about our effect on others, which is all that we can control. To change the things that we can change and accept what we cannot change. Accept in reactiveness. Accept in responsiveness. Except in how we describe it to ourselves and travel on. Yeah? So back to Rolf again. Very, very much about how are we describing these events to ourselves. Is there light at the end of that tunnel? Or are we in that tomb with the stone? Let your anxiety fall away. Well, let your anxiety fall away when you've learned something from it, I'd say. Sorry to edit Jesus' words. Why not? You know? Because this is an age of anxiety in a very particular way. So let your anxiety fall away. Yes. But where it's useful to do so, take something from it. Because every persistent response has the potential within it of illumination. I want you to write that down, Hilary, because that is a really... we'll put it up on the board. Every persistent response, and many of our responses are very persistent, aren't they? You know, we've been there before. has within it the seeds of illumination. That we could see it differently, or we could see ourselves differently, or we could respond differently, or we could let it go. I don't know what's appropriate. I don't know. I am not you. You are not me, but we are interbeing. Yep. Do not ask what you will eat, or what you'll drink, or what you'll wear. Now, do ask, but don't be bound by it. Don't be determined by it. Don't be deceived that is all of who you are. You know, is your uniform sparkly? It's interesting about uniforms, isn't it? That a lot of conformist ideologies require a uniform on the outside as well as a uniform on the inside. Really notice where your thinking is timid or conformist, because actually on the spiritual path you need quite other qualities. You need boldness and courage. Boldness and courage. Even to notice what you've been doing to yourself. And to bring some humor to that. Oh my God, that again. These are the worries who are ignorant of their true meaning. That means once was blind, but now I see. Every day, once was blind, but now I see. That's what consciousness is. Consciousness is the most exquisite process of evolution that we can imagine, but it is beyond our imagining. Our consciousness is evolving. Look, I happen to think our consciousness is evolving between lives, but doesn't matter in the least bit if you think that. I only think it instinctively, not because it matters. It doesn't matter one jot. It doesn't matter one jot what I think about that. But I find something hopeful in that, that things are not wasted somehow. It's like the compost, you know. But please don't think I'm saying that's a good way to think. It's just a variation on the theme. But in this lifetime, we certainly know there is a compost and that the consciousness is evolving and that this is the most subtle form of evolution we can imagine and that we need to bring everything into it in order that it can be its most magnificent self. That it can most accurately express the strengths of the soul, of the divine being that you are. And that this is a joy and not just arduous. Here it is. Above everything, strive. No, I don't like that word, strive. Anyway, here it is, but strive. I would say allow. We strive too hard, but we often strive for what's very temporary. Oh, I mean, I'm a big striver. I'm, you know, and I'm grateful for what striving's given me. But I overdo it often. Above everything, strive, or alternatively, also known as allow, for the divine kingdom and its harmonious order. You see, and this is where I'm going to finish and take some questions from you. The soul wants us, the soul of humanity wants us. We as human beings want a kind of the regeneration that is possible only when there is harmony between ourselves and others. And this is really where I started the teaching for today. Because if you listen to music, and I hope you all do, but if you listen to music as a spiritual practice, you'll hear that some of the most touching harmonies come after the resolution of discords. You will also hear that some of the most nourishing harmonies are unexpected quite what's gone before. Yeah? And you will also hear that while a single note can be absolutely sublime, a single note can move us to tears, if we allow that. But some of the greatest harmonies are when a number of different notes are brought together in this moment. We know that they will also fall away, that this moment of harmony will give way to something else. Yeah? But it is in those moments of harmony that we are most able to draw from our peaceful nature. And it is in those moments of harmony, particularly perhaps when we are the instrument that has brought them about, that we experience our greatest happiness. And harmony doesn't mean thinking exactly the same thing, or even, you know, that funny thing, we seem to be on the same page, or even in the same place. I think it's something much deeper than that. The harmony arises from saying, your life matters, and you matter to me. We have differences. Of course we do. We have differences. When I woke up this morning, my first thought was, I'm on retreat. My second thought was just incredible gratitude that this life has brought me so many retreats. I mean, how fortunate we are. And the third thought, and really it wasn't linear. I really did have all these thoughts at once because there was a harmony. My heart just felt so full of love for all of you. Because this is what retreat allows. This is what listening to the soul allows. It is that depth of unconditionality when we can, as Frankl said, go above ourselves, when our consciousness is not restricted by the conditioned mind of the personality, and we just are. We're just here. We're just being. We're just humans being. We're just souls being. We're just beings being with one another. Om Shanti.